Get right to it. Hour number three coming up now. We're going to do some things this hour that'll be, I think, interesting, add some dynamics and dimension and perhaps some resolution to some of the open ends on this. Now, we mentioned Dr. Michael Sala at the end of the last hour. Michael has been involved in this field for a long time. He's very well known. I've been on this program a number of times and has been involved with this story. To a number of different degrees, and one of which I'm going to use. He wrote a letter to another researcher not all that long ago, and at the end of the letter said, "Feel free to share my email with whoever is interested, Michael Sala." And so what we're going to do is have Clay and Sean and Robert. I'm going to read this, and when I'm finished with it, and if you gentlemen can make a few notes, about 8 or 10 small paragraphs, that's all. I think you've probably already seen the letter anyhow. It's around. So what I'll do is read it, and then we'll have you comment on it and give us your opinions. You ready?
Go to it, brother.
Okay. He writes, "Aloha, such and such. Apologies for the delay, but I have been recently traveling. I know the Pickering brothers quite well, and have met their source A, Richard Thielman, before. I met him in 2008 and gave public support to his credibility and claims regarding secret UN meetings and discussing UFOs. Lieutenant Commander Thielman showed up at our meeting attended by the Pickerings, Bob Vanderklok, and myself in his full-dress Navy uniform and a yearbook filled with pictures, certificates, etc., of his career as a Navy aviator / EWS. There was no doubt that he was a former Navy officer. I saw pictures of a Navy jet with his name on it, as is the custom for carrier-based naval aircraft. Then, at a certain point, which appeared to be very credible information that was corroborated by other sources, began going bizarre with claims of travel to Venus, meeting a silicon-shaped shifting extraterrestrial life form, etc. I began distancing myself from this new level of information, which did not resonate as accurate and did not match other sources. What eventually led to a major break was Thielman's identity being exposed by some clever sleuthing by UFO researchers in 2010. Thielman had earlier told the Pickerings that if he was ever exposed, he would disavow what he had publicly said. They told me what he planned to do, and I strongly advised against it. Thielman, nevertheless, went ahead and publicly disavowed all his prior claims on ever having had a naval career as a Navy officer aviator. He was now saying that he had impersonated an officer and joined organizations like the Navy League under false pretenses. I was greatly disappointed by him, effectively throwing all his supporters under the bus by his actions, and was confused by the Pickerings supporting him in taking such drastic action. It led me believing that an elaborate psyop had been conducted where some genuine information had been released, i.e. the UN meetings, but was followed up by misinformation, Venus mission, Silicon ET, and lots of drama with the public disavowal. I hoped that by the Pickerings publicly coming forward after all these years, they would finally cast light on all these events and explain why Thielman had disavowed himself and reveal the extensive documents in his yearbook substantiating his prior Navy career. I was really surprised none of this happened. Instead, what I heard in the first interview with Jeff was a rehash of earlier events and no new information. That made me question why the Pickerings had chosen to come forward at this point. At the very least, they are obliged to clear up the controversy caused by Thielman publicly disavowing everything that he had publicly said. I remain on friendly terms with the Pickering brothers, but do question why they don't put the controversy to rest by releasing documents that prove Thielman was a Navy officer and that he has had them in his possession from at least 2008. The claim that Thielman's official documents were scrubbed so he could go black may explain why no public searches will find these. But with a yearbook of photos and documents, etc., the documentary evidence is available. So why withhold these? Feel free to share my email with whoever is interested. All right, now who wants to go first? Sean?
I'll go first.
Clay? All right.
Yes, I'll go first.
Go ahead.
Number one, I'll be very clear. Clay and I have maybe had a one-sentence contact with Michael since 2010. So for him to say he maintains a friendly relationship with us is an overstatement. It's not adversarial, but it's not friendly. That's not accurate. Two, I want to say to Michael, why are you so naive as to think that Richard would not turn on failsafe when the entire program was put in jeopardy? How can you keep clinging on to that notion? It's ridiculous. The whole essence of failsafe is to ensure that the program itself, in some way, shape, or form, and so in some sort of generational expression, will continue onto itself ever after. So I don't understand why Michael doesn't get what failsafe is.
All right, well, I think our listeners understand. Total denial, turning on a dime, so to speak, of everything that someone has said is that's failsafe. That's you pull the plug. It's never happened, doesn't happen, in order to protect the larger, greater good, the program, i.e. in this case, correct?
Correct.
All right. Okay. Next.
Clay.
Yeah. Jeff, first of all, Michael's rebuttal, that letter, when was that published?
When was it published?
Yeah, that letter that you're
writing. Well, it was subsequent to our first program, so I don't see a date on the top of it here.
Oh, but it's just recent, very recent, I think.
Yeah, after our first program, so within the month.
Okay. Mike has to understand how he does not understand. He doesn't understand the black world. He doesn't understand that, as I said earlier, they've gotten quite good of being able to learn from the mistakes and covering things up. This isn't Bob Lazar, where there's a phone book where you got his name in it or a W-4 form. This doesn't work that way. The military, they've got it covered eight ways of Sunday, and if it leaks, it's already swept. Two admirals had a fall on their sword because one particular admiral was mentioned in the very early communique when we began the story. There are so many elements that how failsafe works that even if people looked at Dahlgren, because at the end of the day, how did he get into Dahlgren?
Dahlgren, again, is the facility that Dr. Bruce McAbee was in. All right.
And not only did he get into Dahlgren, but Dahlgren itself went into failsafe because when that got opened up, they don't want NCIS and the various agencies looking up underneath the skirt to see if they dotted every I, crossed every T, and put a ribbon around it and found out if there was any other inconsistencies or security breaches. Now, it doesn't mean our guy was a security breach because McAbee even spent 3.5 hours talking to somebody who understands the science and the mathematics and the systems that the Navy's involved in. How do you fake that? So it's, you know, we can sit here and argue, how do you clear up the record? You can't clear up something when you don't have clearances. And we've said it from day one. We've never let in unclassified information. But when you look at the totality of the story and the certain intricacies that were involved in how programs work, there's no end user. Good luck if you can find an end user. A DB-214? Hey, man, even if there was one out there, that got burned up in St. Louis in 1973. So it's like, it's almost laughable that people think that they could be able to find out if somebody served in the military when they come from the analog era. That's what made him so attractive to the program, Jeff, and to the listeners. So, I mean, we could browbeat this 10 ways of Sunday. It won't alleviate the fact that that there's this is incredibly intricate, and that even the folks that who knew Rich in the Navy League and the Naval Order, you know, he didn't produce any documentation that said who he was and produced forms which the head of the order was asking for. So by implication, they're saying he's a fraud, but he was vetted in by people, military people who knew him or knew of the program, i.e. the two UN representatives, his counterparts who followed him subsequently after the failsafe program, the disclosure UN. That's two officers I spoke of in the earlier interview. I met those two officers. So I'm sure maybe perhaps one of those vetted him in later. Or within the two Navy League or Naval Order programs.
Okay.
But, I think my letter at the end will kind of...
All right. Well, we look forward to that. Let me ask Bob to come in here now. Robert, anything you want to add to that? I think the bottom line is that the failsafe is being viewed skeptically by Michael for a reason stated. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I'd like to remind the audience of two things. When a military man accepts orders, he dedicates himself to the success of the mission, not the success of himself. And in fact, he's willing to sacrifice his own life for the mission. Okay? This mission was critical. So, second thing I'd like to remind the audience of is the opening of the TV series Mission Impossible, where the tape recorder recites your mission if you should choose to accept it is blah, blah, blah. If your mission should fail, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of existence. Okay? So that, in a nutshell, shows you how things operate. If the mission succeeds, it's not acknowledged. If the mission is not completed, the mission goes on with others taking over. But in this case, as in many others, it requires someone to sacrifice himself so that the mission can go on. The mission went on, and we have seen that now, 7 years later, 8 years later, the mission has succeeded and initiated, propelled, completed by the same group, the United States Navy. Michael Sala, I like Michael. He's a very erudite fellow. Michael makes mistakes like everyone else. I translated the burnt memo for Michael Sala. When it came out, nobody understood what the burnt memo that Robert Wood had discovered, the CIA memo referring to President Kennedy's assassination in code words, referring to the 5412 committee and precipitation in Washington. Michael Sala knew nothing of that. He called me up in 2008 and asked me about it, and I gave him 3 hours translating the whole thing. He has written a book, which is a very good book, called Kennedy's Last Stand. But in it, he goes beyond the facts. He claims that Alan Dulles wrote the burnt memo. Alan Dulles had been out of office for over a year, and the burnt memo was written by a very weird spook whose name was James Jesus Angleton. So Michael Sala makes mistakes. I think Michael Sala made a mistake in walking away and washing his hands of this just to preserve his reputation. And I think it was a mistake and, in a sense, a betrayal to the confidence that we had invested in. I published his articles. And so I was just disappointed. I hold no grudge. There were others who were part of this. Dr. Maccabee very innocently just didn't know he was being used to discredit the mission or to, you know, sabotage the mission. And so he just answered honestly, and he told all the facts. Richard Thielman walked in to his base, a top security base, full commander's uniform, briefcase, identification, no guard accompanying him. And that can't be done by Joe Blow going to, you know, Old Navy and buying a uniform and pretending that he's that. So I stuck with my brothers, the Pickerings, and, you know, I still support Richard Thielman. I don't know how much of the mission to Venus and all of that you've spoken about, but there's a lot of stuff that's come out over the last 8 years.
Yeah, we got, Robert, we got, just to let you know, we got the whole story basically out there up to the point that Richard did not report to the Pickerings anything. He said, I'm not sure if he didn't remember, but there was no information given about the 3.5 weeks of mission duration on the target planet. So before and after, yes, but nothing about the actual time on planet. We got everything else.
I want to add one idea about the idea of failsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when Hess went into Europe, into England in 1941, the speculation was whether he went in with the blessings of the Third Reich or not.
Of course he did.
I'm gonna layer this. In Scorzini's book, when Scorzini was tasked to rescue Mussolini, Scorzini was brought in front of Hitler, and Hitler says, "I want you to go in there, and I want you to get the El Duce out of there.
Uh-huh.
If you fail, I will disavow you."
Same thing he did to Hess.
Mm-hmm. Right. But what's interesting is that factoid, which is historically recorded. Now, it doesn't matter whether we all understand this. It's what's important is that it's historically recorded. Scorzini got from Hitler's mouth that I will disavow you if you get caught trying to rescue Mussolini. Mm-hmm. Now you have something tangible to dovetail into the Hess mission. And I mentioned this to David Irving. This is all part of failsafe. The same thing happened to Rich.
Well, I understand. We understand the technique. We got it. Yeah, you made it very clear.
What I'd like to say, if I may.
I want you to understand that everyone understands it, but the important thing is it's documented. This is not speculation. This is a standard operating procedure, which is very, very important to understand. This is not something we're speculating. This is how it works. That's it.
No, I agree. There's no problem there. Go ahead, Robert.
I wanted to say, in a very tactful way, that I did receive quite a bit of information directly from Richard about his experiences off-world. I won't go into detail with them.
On the planet itself, Robert?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And about the nature of the alien. I will only say this, that it is consistent with the information that has been revealed on your show by William Mills Tompkins. And that's all I'll say now, and I'll speak to you about it privately. But since my brother's Pickering, we want to keep a cap on it, okay? But I'll say this. Richard confided in me, and I believe him. And it's consistent with everything that William Mills Tompkins revealed in Selected by Extraterrestrials.
Right. Bill has an amazing amount to say and said it. And there are going to be 2 or 3 books coming out. Dr. Bob Wood will be bringing them out posthumously that come from Bill's records, so we look forward to those as well. Yeah, he's remarkable.
There's an anecdote that I want to get in with you guys that I think also illustrates who Richard was. Clay's bar was on a main street, and Richard had parked his car down the street. So he's with us. We're enjoying his company, and then he went out to his car, and his car was missing, which means his car was towed. So Richard comes back. He's furious. He goes, I parked my car in a legal spot. So he ends up going to the tow place up on 34th Street in the West Side Highway. He comes in. The clerk's in front of me goes, I parked my car in the right spot, and you guys towed it. He goes, well, no, you didn't. He goes, yes, I did. He goes, no, you didn't. Yes, I did. Okay, fine. So Richard goes, give me your number. Excuse me? Give me your number. So they gave him their number. He ended up making a phone call.
Fax number.
He called a friend at the NSA. He goes, let me know your satellite over Manhattan about 11:15, please. Okay, find Central Park. Got it? Okay, go south, further, 14th Street. Got it. Okay, head west on 14th. Got it. Okay. Stop there. You see a car, X color? Yes. Photograph, please. Resolution? Blah, blah, blah. Stamp. Send it to, he puts the number in. The picture comes out. He said, that's my car. Now, Rich spent 3 days in the break for that, for misuse of government property.
Well, what about the guy that gave him the information?
It was not a classified resolution.
Okay, the guy that gave him the information would have been in trouble, too.
No, because he was authorized. He was authorized by Rich.
Oh, so Rich had rank? Okay.
He didn't, where Rich didn't really screw up is he didn't break three meter resolution. Otherwise, he'd been really in deep stuff.
I would say.
So,
all right.
So
good.
Anyhow, he went before the board. I guess the fellow officers that would punish him, and you know they're all generals or admirals, and excuse me, no loss of rank or pay. 3 days in the brig, and I was wondering where he disappeared to, but I kind of wish I went with him. Actually, you know, that was interesting. When that happened, he was short of cash. I gave him $300 to go get his car, and he just paid me back later. And it was happened to be three
All
days
right.
later. But that's an interesting anecdote. But that's nothing compared to some of the trouble he's been in. People wouldn't even believe me. But hey, I wanted to bring something up to you. What happened with Mike Sala is Mike didn't like the story. He didn't like the off-world program story. Didn't comport with his view of extraterrestrials. That was the feeling I got. And it
wasn't he one of the few who supported you guys though after 2010.
He supported the whole UN disclosure confirmation,
right?
Or that initiative. But as soon as we started talking about when Rich got pulled from that into the other program, barely 4 months into it. He got antsy. He didn't like the story.
Well, it's a very unusual story. All right, we can understand.
Here's what I say about that, Jeff. Here's what I say about people find that unusual. And just bear with me. If the NIDS researchers can get on the Skinwalker Ranch, okay, and they mm-hmm. can take testimony from very credible people like the Bureau of Indian Affairs about upright bipedal hominids wearing trench coats with dog heads, smoking cigarettes. Hold on. Big raptor type eyes or a raptor footprint at the base of a tree or a bulletproof wolf or an entity crawling out of some sort of light wormhole and then running off the tree. You know, this is not about whether we like something or not. That's a very well documented incident. So here we're talking about a silicon species, primarily silicon, and who's involved with at least a black program, which installs units in the subject chest so that they can survive in certain environments and have spent time off-world, wherever that's been. So what's so fantastic, if you think about it? Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, if you ask me, I think people are nuts if they believe upright bipedal dogs smoking cigarettes. I mean, that's kind of crazy, don't you think? You see, I don't think it's crazy.
The Skinwalker Ranch would make a great Hollywood film.
Yeah, but here's the point.
Can I get something in here?
Yes, Robert.
But
1 second, Robert. Go ahead.
Just 1 second. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. I want to go back to the Stooges and their persecution of Richard Thielman. And as I don't know if you've told them, but they went to the FBI. They went to the police. They wanted to get Richard Thielman arrested. They claimed that he wasn't entitled to wear the ribbons that he had earned, et cetera, stolen valor. The irony was that within days of that happening, the Supreme Court ruled that that was not a crime. And it was so amazing, the timing of events with these two Stooges trying everything in their power to accuse him of a crime, that, I mean, 3 days later, the Supreme Court ruled that it wasn't. I'm specifically that accusation.
That's pretty interesting. All right.
Yes.
Now you've got very good, Robert. Thank you. We got not a lot of time. Clay, you got a letter we're going to read a little bit later.
Sure.
Not quite yet. Hold on. I've got two questions from another researcher.
Sure.
That it's not Michael. And by the way, Michael, if you're listening, you're invited to come on the program for an hour and discuss this from your perspective. That's more than welcome. There's a quote from Michael. He said, "A significant descriptive term chosen by source A, Rich, for the extraterrestrials that would show up in 2017 was, quote, the controllers, end quote. Such a term has clear psychological connotations and was chosen to have a particular effect on the target audience, both the United Nations member states in attendance and the general public to which the information was being leaked. This is a clue that source A, Richard, is conveying information that has been designed to trigger a certain psychological reaction that influences how issues are framed and discussed," end quote. Here's the question. "I am very curious to know how the latest Pickering Brothers information from source A relates to the acclimation process and what exactly is the psychological reaction anticipated or gained. What do the brothers think?" So, Sean or Clay?
I'll offer very quickly. First of all, the concept of the nomenclature called the controllers was very early label that was put on it that eventually morphed into conformers. The controllers basically that reference was the idea that this particular ET race seemed to control, or at least other ET races defer to them. Okay.
Right. We made that clear in an earlier program. No. Yes.
Right. Okay. So.
By the way, this quote from Sala was February 20th, 2008. So it conforms with what you're saying about the earlier date of the term "the controllers" being used. 2008.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It was an antiquated term. So to put that label on this particular silicone race is it's antiquated. It evolved.
It's 10 years old. Okay.
Well, no, but even within the relative time frame that we talked about with Rich, between 2008 and 2012, it was antiquated because That term controller was a very early term in 2008 that morphed into conformer.
Who morphed it?
So it's not in. Well, his program morphed it because as they moved through the program, they got a better idea of what they were dealing with. They didn't know what to call these things.
Okay. All right, here's the second one.
I read the email where it goes, "I don't know what I'm looking. I have no idea what I'm looking at." And eventually, the later emails, we illustrate exactly what he understands to be what he's looking at.
All right, this next quote is from...
evolution.
Yes, this next quote is from Robert. And it's from, again, written back in, or quoted back in 2008, February 20th, by Michael Sala. Confirmation and update on secret United Nations meeting. Quote, "The basic premise behind this secret UN UFO meeting was a, quote, testing of the waters, end quote, in order to prepare the worldwide UFO disclosure through the United Nations. The story was intentionally leaked through the Pickering brothers in order to evaluate the reaction of the public and the UFO community, end quote, Robert Morningstar. And the question is, in response to the recent return of Sean and Clay Pickering and the story told to them by source A, Richard, might the brothers have been unwittingly manipulated and therefore their previous narratives controlled, leaving them distracted from pursuing the deeper issues of truth they had so diligently investigated and astutely analyzed? And then there's a YouTube citation, and it goes on, the possible manipulation by source A, Richard, using the brothers as a conduit for his said story slash info slash disinfo, became their main focus and ultimately resulted in their silence for 8 years. Mission accomplished. Perhaps we may glean important information from their experience and be aware and awakened to any subtext agendas happening now. There's another citation. And if they still believe source A 100%, what's next for them, and how do they apply their original quest of looking for the truth to the latest round of information now being released? This is kind of a rambling question, but go ahead.
It's very clear what the answer is, okay? Number one, the particular questioner seems to think that we got distracted into making ourselves inert. Not true. Clay and I were involved in a lot of different areas of research. And just because we're not at the forefront of the research doesn't mean we can't do research. We can't work with other researchers. So the questioner makes a fatal flaw that he seems to think that because we can't walk and chew bubblegum at the same time, we can involve ourselves in other research and facilitate our knowledge and our point of view and our concerns into other areas with other researchers. So, no, the answer is it didn't stop us. It didn't make us inert, and there's no lessons to be learned from it because we could simply walk and chew bubblegum at the same time.
Okay, so last section. And if they still believe source A 100%, what's next for them? So, what's next for you brothers? Where do we go from here? We put the whole story on the record now. It's here, and you've told it.
No,
it's a very difficult story. We've got as much of the story as we're going to get, let's put it that way, on this program on the air. I know there's a heck of a lot more because you've had too many years with this. But what's next for you? Where do you want to take this next? That's, I think, the final question of this long, rambling question. Where do you see it going?
This is Clay here. First of all, as far as the UFO community, lectures, books, videos, Here's my declaration. The day I make a dime on this, I'm discredited. I will not take a dime from this. And I think I can speak for Sean on this issue. When I know a story, when I know a man, and I'm trying to be fair and objective, and looking at the totality and looking at the black world, looking how this works, there is no question there was a program. Excuse me, folks, there is a program because reports are still being written about this. And I know that through my intel friend. But we're not going to talk about that. I'd like to see this move along because at the end of the day, there's two of the most important things confronting the human species. One is continuity of species and two, technology transfer. And that's... That's what we're confronted with.
Is there any okay? All right. Is there any interface? No. We're running out of time. Is there any interface with the information recently released, with the video and the two naval flyers, and the program as you know it? Any connectivity there at all?
Clay,
The connectivity I see there is that this is part of what should have happened, disclosure confirmation, which Bob talked about earlier tonight. That was right. the 2013 target. Michael didn't get that right in his original report. We said 2013 was confirmation, or excuse me, disclosure, which morphed into confirmation. And 2017 was the year of unambiguous contact. Obviously, that got pushed back. So the timeline has been pushed back dramatically. So I see the primer of what the AATIP is, everything based on from 2007, the DIA, which Richard was a part of that, and all the way up to 2011, 2012, when the program got cut, when Rich was in failsafe. So that was the primer is this off-world intelligence, I believe, and I think Sean would say the same thing, which is pushing this forward. And it's not going to go away, and it's going to probably become more magnified.
Do you want to quickly get into the visual image of the Tic Tac?
Let me get Robert on here. He's been standing by, and I'm sure he has some things to say.
Make sure you leave me enough time, guys.
Yeah, how much do you need? 3-4 minutes?
10 minutes.
All right, Robert, you've got about four minutes.
When I was apprised of the alien contact and the name, the controllers, I didn't like it then. But now I realize that it was really very appropriate. And that the information that we had received, it was completely controlled. Everything was completely controlled to tell a coherent story and a coherent narrative. And now that I know who was pulling the strings, it was the aliens. The aliens were demanding the United States government tell the people and apprise them of their presence first. And it gave them a timetable, 2013 to establish diplomatic relations with them, and 2017 for open contact. I think we came as close as we are going to come for a couple of months with the open contact. I think that the peekaboo disclosure, as I call it, is enough to just change the consciousness of the people and make us receptive, and they have been presented in a peaceful manner. The fleet of UFOs was overflying the Navy fleet for 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks later from the first contact that they had two aircraft off to be able to send them after that. Right. So it's presented in a peaceful context.
You know what's interesting to me, gentlemen, is that here we have an absolute solid piece of video with the Tic Tac, two very competent, if not heroic, naval pilots, one of whom is stating unequivocally that this is off-world intelligence, not from this planet, and nothing much happened. It kind of passed by. It's in the books now. It didn't light a fire that's burning. Maybe they'll drop something else on us here, more video, and ramp it up again, but it kind of came and went, and people went, basically, okay, interesting. And that was it. So, all right, Clay, it's time for you to step in. I've got just 10 minutes, so let's get
to
your letter.
Okay, very good. All right, I'm going to do my best, guys. All right. All right, by the way, that Tic Tac, that was a cooperation. Eric Davis said it's not human. He didn't say extraterrestrial, but we can maybe take a little leap there. We won't hold Eric to it and say, okay, let's say it's not human, and we'll go from there. But there was a cooperation, and I think that cooperation dealt with off-world intelligence and the military. So,
do you know where that, real quick, Clay, do you know where that video came from when it was taken? Some reports said 2004.
In 2004 is my understanding.
Okay.
I mean, the chain of custody is a problem. But anyhow, let me just share this with you guys. When the team members went off-world, they had to wear a collar, as I mentioned. Okay, the collar opens up the cognitive centers of the brain, turns off pain receptors, language centers. So when you have that collar on, you're not given information, but you're using parts of your brain you normally don't use, and it helps you understand concepts that you would never have access to or know how to access as far as the brain is concerned. And this is for a lack of better words, but when the collar is taken off of you, you still retain that ability for a short period of time. And that ability will slowly start to recede the longer you have that collar off. So when Rich came back, and I'm sure the other team members, is that they were put under a MEG. That's a magnetoencephalography. And that's like kind of, for some of you folks, what does it look like? It looks like a Marge Simpson hairdryer. So it's based for imaging technique that identifies brain activity and measures small magnetic fields produced in the brain. So Rich was put under that, okay? So keep in mind, he has a high mathematical propensity. He has no formal training. He's not peer-reviewed. He's not published. He doesn't go to Ivy League cocktail parties or with top physicians at top institutes. The only training he got was at SLAC right out of when he got out of Great Lakes Naval Training Facility. He spent 6 months at Stanford at SLAC and under visiting Professor Richard Feynman. So when he got back, obviously, the debriefing is going to be very tough. They want to know everything. They're going to drug you up. They're going to ask you a lot of questions. They want to download. And I can tell you it is very, very onerous and oppressive. And I heard on more than one occasion, so does Sean, and I don't know if you have, Bob, but about some of that aspect. But I'll read you this because of that capability yet. So any intelligences or academicians who have clearances and or science or institutes who know that he has the ability to see these certain theoretical concepts, they're going to exploit it. Let me read something to you. This comes from a major university in the United States. I'm going to be very careful here because I don't want to say. The date is March 18th, 2011. 2011. This comes from Department Office of President, okay? I won't say the president's name. The subject, admission to faculty, Richard J. Thielman. Dear Mr. Thielman, on behalf of the Board of Trustees, permit me to extend a warm welcome to you from such and such university. It was a pleasure meeting you at the General Trustee meeting, and you created quite an impression with some of the trustee members, along with some faculty in the such and such. It's always enlightening to have direct involvement with the people of the universities, as this keeps us informed and aware of the level of education under development at this fine institution. Mr. Thielman, you are an exceptional individual with a vast set of skills. It is clear, with additional education, you could become a scholar of world renown. Alas, you are one of the many exceptional people that we have at this university. This is a problem with so many people gathered under one roof. The Board of Trustees convened twice. That's in all uppercase letters. Twice. Highly unusual for a vote on extending you privileges and a position to this institution. Upon extensive discussion, the final vote was 13 to 12, with 13 being against the proposal. This was a complete split down the middle and a painful vote at that. We have to balance the needs of the younger students, faculty, current research, etc., and make prudent financial decisions, especially in this fiscally challenging environment. Mr. Thielman, in no uncertain terms, should you consider this a rejection? Very few people ever garner the attention of the Board of Trustees General Meeting, let alone two of the meetings. In fact, on the second meeting, you were in the second topic of discussion. I would like to offer my best wishes to you and hope that you can continue to pursue your interest in physics. Sincerely, Mr. President. Now, that's interesting. Here's a guy that has no formal physics training, who just got outed as a fraud. And the problem is university can't figure out how to utilize him because they can't hide him. They can't get out of the disavowal. How do you take someone on that is damaged goods? That's under failsafe.
Clay, a question. He must have Or did he apply to the university for some kind of a position in the physics department? No. Is that what this letter is pertinent to?
No, let me answer that. Yeah, I just want to say, Jeff, you're a sharp person, brother. You're asking the right question. He spent 3 months, John, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm going on memory, 3 months, 3 days a week, 3 hours at a time, taking the classes and taking the test. And he aced them. Aced them. This is why it came. He was the subject of the vote twice before this particular board. And at the end of the day, it literally came down to the vote of the president. And it's just that it was toxic. However, the concepts and his abilities were remarkable. And I'll say this, he wasn't just utilized at this particular university, but some of the esteemed universities around this country, and some particular experiment that was happening abroad. I'll leave it there.
John?
It wasn't a state-run institution. It was private, and it was the elite of the elite.
All right. Seems to me a gifted individual who could contribute to the greater good of physics, especially in a private university, would not be turned away on a 13-12 vote. It's must have been very disappointing for Rich.
Let's put it this way. He folded the letter up into one inch by two inch.
I get it.
A piece of paper in front of the president, mm-hmm. because he couldn't understand it either. And that was, like he said, a rejection's a rejection. Mm-hmm. But my point I'm trying to tell you folks is that there's help out there. There's extraterrestrials out there that want to see the species survive. There's other problems with other species, and that may be much more closer to home than people realize. But at least with this one, from what we gather, is that they want to see us to survive because we've progressed so fast the last 100 years technologically. But we're moving so fast that we don't know if we're going to be able to survive the impact of that technology or be able to make adjustments. And this is one of the clear messages we've got from Rich during this mission. And part of that seeding was to open the Cognitive Centers and be able to, maybe through someone like Rich, be able to possibly give us a glimpse of how we can survive.
The problem with the technology is not the technology, it's the hands of those who control it. They're using it for negative and dark purposes, to control, enslave, and hegemonize the world population. It's not good. That's the problem with technological advances like we've seen. It gets into the wrong hands.
I'm all for the human species empowering itself and disclosing and confirming. But we've had, and Bob would agree with this, we've had over 70, almost 80 years now of backpedaling, of obfuscating, and we're doing it again. We're rediscovering the wheel with the whole AATIP. We put it under threat. We've done this and that. And we're getting caught in the legalese of minutia of better sensors detecting this type of phenomena. We're not getting to the heart of it. And I got to tell you, I'm for contact. I am for unambiguous contact. And I think that it's time. As Story Musgrave and I agree, it says we're not going to know who we are until we realize we're not alone.
Right. Well, they just discovered over 1 trillion planets outside of our galaxy. They announced that today.
It's just enough to know.
Yeah.
I'm not asking for assimilation. We're not ready for that. But it's enough to know that we're not alone. And that's the most important thing.
I think we already know that. I don't wait for the government to tell me what I already know. I mean, after looking at this for 30 years, reading God knows how many reports like you have and many of you listening have, We already know we're not alone. It's not even a question up for debate. And to wait for this corrupt government to tell us it's okay to believe that is something I'm not going to wait for.
Well, I agree with you, Jeff. I agree with you, Jeff, on that. But sometimes what's happening is that power is not letting us, not giving us, allowing us that right of passage.
Need,
it's the key.
Yeah,
here.
We need it's what the, you said. We need unambiguous contact. Stop the games. And if ET is smart, they'll understand this planet is not being run for the good of its majority. And they need to step in if they're good in consciousness or whatever they have. They need
it's
to do that.
Test. We need, Jeff, it's a stress test that humanity needs to go through.
Yeah, well, we're not going to make it. Not
well,
under these circumstances.
I'll say this to you. You know, every one of us at one day, when our mothers took us to the bus stop and put us in the bus, we had to let go of our hand. And we're going into the unknown world of kindergarten or first grade. When we got on our first bike and we wiped out, we all got back up and we adjusted.
Yeah.
And I have no doubts that the human species can adjust. The key is that we just got to get overcome these burdensome bureaucracies to be able to work and not melt down.
Well, I agree.
When we realize that we're not alone.
They're unfortunately worse than burdensome bureaucracies. There's some real evil there. Robert, a final comment, and thanks for being here with us tonight.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. I would like to say it is very credible that extraterrestrials exist on Venus. It's really interesting that science fiction portrays extraterrestrials from all the other planets, but everybody stopped talking about Venus in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And it is the closest planet.
Now, I've been saying that for a long time. Nobody talks about Venus. Sums up.
Let's have a show on that one. Thank you.
Hey, by the way, before you go, I want to say one line just to throw a big monkey wrench in this whole thing, okay? Can I do that, guys?
Go ahead.
Sure.
All right. Because it doesn't matter what people believe or what they don't believe. The last mission, Rich and his team members were 5 solar units out from Pluto. That was his last known location where he could look back and see the solar system, except all the planets except Uranus and Neptune. He was 5 solar units out, and he believes he went out much further. That was the last mission. And
yeah.
We did not get into it, and it's just too much, and... But he was gone for 2.5-3 months with that one.
All right. Very good. Sean, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Clay, ditto.
Jeff, you're the best, brother.
Well, we try. And Robert, thank you. It's always good to have you on. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
All right. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
All right. And thanks to all of you. So we have taken it from the beginning and wrapped it up as much as we can. And so it is memorialized. It's all there. And you can listen to it and do what you will. All right. We'll be right back with you in 21 hours tomorrow night. Talk to you then.